This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB. This is Views from the 216 on the FCB Radio Network.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Views from the 216. This is your host, Ashley. I'm sorry, this is Views with Ashley Evans. It used to be formerly Views from the 216, but this is Views with Ashley Evans, and I am your host, Ashley Evans. Today, I come to you after a very, very difficult time in our nation with an onslaught of mass shootings. And what I hope to try to talk about as best as I can is the reactions to these deadly events. And what we think needs to be done to go forward. So like I said, this is probably pretty tough situation right now. And a conversation that I feel necessary, but also it's unfortunate to have to have. So that's where we're going today. But before we get into it, let me do my regular 1-2. And I would like to invite you all to the show to participate. This is a show where we look for some active participation. And if you are interested in being on the show, if you have comments about what has been said, any reactions to any of our previous shows, if you would like to hear about a certain topic or hear more about something we've already covered, please, please, please give us a call at 216-302-4139. That's 216-302-4139. Leave us a message there and we will gladly include you in the show. If you do not want to call, you can feel free to email at views216fcb@gmail.com. That's views216fcb@gmail.com. If you're also interested in connecting with me on social media, you can connect with me at Ashley's Views. So that's AshleyesVIEWS on Instagram. You can also search for Ashley Evans on both Twitter and Facebook, but I am most responsive on Instagram. So that's Ashley's, AshleyesVIEWS Views on Instagram. Feel free to inbox and message me there. You do just generally get a sense of where I'm at and what I'm doing. But also some follow-up on the things that I'm thinking about and what I'm watching across the news, across the nation. So please feel free to do that. I've also been offering some book recommendations as I convene what is called the Reading and Revolution Book Club, which is online, but it has been geared to try to bring together neighbors in Cleveland, Ohio, in our Buckeye Shaker neighborhood, but also to help inform some of the decisions that we are making as we go forward into our daily lives, working in our community groups, leading our different charges at work, whether it's the full organization or departments, and also what we end up asking for from our policymakers. So it is trying to give a foundation in and effectively racial equity, and some of the things that we can begin to think about as we think about ourselves, but also think about others, and create a society that we would love to live and thrive in, create groups and people that function with empathy and understanding to make solid and sound decisions for everyone around us. So anyway, so that is the Reading and Revolution Book Club. You can find that on Facebook. Get that information, find the link to join us in the discussion, or just simply get book recommendations. And when you have your leisure time, especially given this is now the summer months where sometimes we like to sit in our gardens and out on beaches and take our books with us, you can feel free just to take those into consideration. So this month we are reading The Yellow House. It's a memoir. Memoir written by Sarah M. Broom. So again, that's The Yellow House, a memoir written by Sarah Broom. Sarah is discussing her growth and childhood and experience in New Orleans, Louisiana, being a survivor of Katrina, and just reflecting on what some of the things that she was very familiar with in her life, including her yellow house, and how that was how those things affected her in her life and her experience. So far I'm getting into it. It seems like a really wonderful book. You can definitely find this in your local bookstore or Amazon, anywhere to that nature. Our book club does partner with a local bookstore, which is Loganberry Books, which is on Larchmere Avenue in Cleveland, Ohio. So that's Loganberry Books. So they do have that book there available. And just a quick mention, last month, we finished up Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson. And I'm just going to mention that again because I'm not sure if I was able to get that in into any of our shows the way that they were scheduled. So those are the last two books that we were reading. Just Mercy was a very excellent book that made some very profound insights into the criminal justice system, the role of the Supreme Court, and how we treat folks who are on death row and their difficulty often, and especially in southern regions of the United States, of having some due diligence and actual justice being served. If you guys saw the movie Just Mercy with, oh my goodness, I see his face and can't say it. But if you saw the movie Just Mercy, which I do believe was kind of released in 2020 or so, I do just simply remember that it was one of the quarantine movies. And I do believe it was in a series in where Amazon made it available after the George Floyd murder, and with Jamie Foxx, that's who I was thinking of. So Just Mercy with Jamie Foxx is released. If you saw that, that focused on one specific case that Bryan Stevenson worked on, which was a very foundational and formative case for him. But his book does highlight other issues and other cases with women, with teens, that are very significant and for us to think about and to be able to, again, inform some of the choices that we make in how we operate and how we vote and how we create a equitable society. So, again, if there is any time that you want to join us, please feel free to look that up. Again, that's the Reading and Revolution Book Club on Facebook. So now that we got that out the way, the heavy hitting. The last thing I do want to say before we get started is thank you to my recent guests. We had Fahim Shabazz on the show, on our last show. We had Miss Erica, who talked about trans rights, on our show. So we've had some phenomenal shows coming out the hopper, and we hope to do more and have more folks again involved. And like I just said at the top of this, is that you all are welcome as well. If you have a story and you want to share it, please, 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 again, feel free to reach out. So again, just a great big thank you, great big I love you to those folks that have been supporting me, that have been on the show, that is bringing just a wealth of knowledge and ideas to us all. So thank you all. So, okay. Here in the United States, we, within a week's time, 2 weeks' time maybe, have witnessed the horrors of mass shootings around the country. We began with the shooting in Buffalo, New York, where people were gunned down just for going to the grocery store. We then shortly thereafter were faced with the horrors of a shooting in a school in Uvalde, Texas. We moved into a weekend. So I'm recording this. It is now June 7th, and it is a Wednesday. I do normally record on a Saturday or Sunday, but it didn't happen that way. And I do see this somewhat as an art form to me. So sometimes these shows, I really have to digest and process to be able to get out. So that's also where I say, you know, I really try to bring as much information as possible and as much conscious and relatable thought. Because just like you, I process all of this. I try to figure out how these things sit in my own life. And I'm challenged by them. And I'm challenged by the hope and the idea that greater is possible, that, you know, that we could live in a society and we can thrive in society. And that is particularly as a member of the Black community in the United States, but also around the world, and what we call the diaspora. And that is additionally, as a woman. And so I do function on hope. Hope does drive me. But as many, it has been said before, I think I just heard it today on NPR, hope is not a plan. So what that means is, for me, hope is a driver to begin to work and to execute, to create a plan and to execute it. So again, this is why I do this. This is why I host the book club, is because, you know, I try to do as much as I can to be a part of that resource of information and the ability to sit back and think about what is really going on instead of reacting. So anyway, so after Uvalde and Buffalo, over the weekend, according to NBC News, we There was another mass shooting in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in Clarendon County, South Carolina, Saginaw, Michigan, Mesa, Arizona, Bibb County, Georgia, and Phoenix, Arizona. In total, from the latest reports that I have seen from these shootings over the week, just over the weekend, there are 12 dead, and Axios reports 54 injured. So NBC News has reported 12 dead, and Axios reports that 54 are injured. The death rates often do rise because sometimes people who are initially reported as injured do succumb to those injuries and die some days later. You know, today I wanted to try to just probably sit with a question that a lot of us are sitting with, and that is what really needs to be done. So if you're like me, who can vividly remember Columbine, and that was the first mass shooting that I'm aware of, and I think most of the time in public discussion is the first mass shooting that we tend to refer to. So I guess you would say in modern history, that was in 1999. In 99, I was a high school student. I was definitely in a place where you know, I began to kind of witness some things change in terms of just beginning to have a simple conversation about what might happen if someone came to your school with a gun. And then, of course, as I progressed, went on to college, had my own child, and then additionally became an educator. I have witnessed more and more shootings like that. I have, and when I say witness, I do want to, I guess, give a little caveat to that, because, you know, no, I was not there. I was not a survivor. But in the era of mass media, we all become witnesses. And then even more so now with the addition of social media, where things are often captured right away, images are captured, videos are captured. We do bear witness to these horrible moments in our history. So I say that to say, unfortunately, to me, this idea of mass shootings has been maybe common, but also with that, we have found that, or it also has seemed that, a sense of urgency to do something about it and to try to find ways to prevent these shootings has not come from our lawmakers. I do think that even if a lot of the things, for example, especially when we're talking about school shootings, and we have specific regulations or protocols and things like that, those often come from our school boards and local officials and or state administrators. So we definitely, it's definitely been very difficult to get a national kind of standard for what to do to prevent school shootings, let alone mass shootings. And so I want to stop for a second and kind of define that difference. So school shootings, of course, are we can't have quite a few incidences that happen in a school. And I do want to be careful not to minimize or overlook mass shootings that have happened at grocery stores, at movie theaters, at nightclubs. Because those are also in this equation and conversation as well. Definitely in a school shooting situation, what most of the time we probably all collectively, I would hope anyway, could agree upon is the tragedy because they're children. And we often do mourn children in a sense that they haven't had the opportunities to live their life and there's foregone potential. Definitely just simple innocence. And they're in a space where they have no control over anything that's going on in their lives for the most part. They have no control over who's caring for them, they don't have control over safety in a general sense. So it is our responsibility as adults to make sure to care for them versus maybe an adult mass shooting in some other area where and let me not say versus because it's not an and or, but I'm just saying that I think the point I'm making is I think our thoughts often go very quickly to children and mass shootings or in quote unquote school shootings, but mass shootings do cross all age groups. They do cross socioeconomic boundaries. As most people put it when we talk about guns, is bullets have no name to it. So when they are lodged, anybody can be affected. Anybody can be harmed. Anybody can be killed, even if it's not your intention. So, with that, there is a very specific definition of mass shooting, and a mass shooting is an incident where four or more victims at one or more locations close to one another are injured. They could be by multiple firearms or one. And there are some small distinctions between private and public mass shootings. So, at a school, a place of worship, or a business establishment, what is not included in that definition is shootings undertaken by foreign terrorists. And that does not matter how many people die or shootings occur. So mass shootings, basically, and that is a domestic issue. So it is characterized and counted differently if it is caused by a foreign agent. And again, when we also say victim, these victims don't have to die. So I also do point out that I do think there's certain things that get pushed up in media. And so we often probably hear about the cases when there are more deaths, but a mass shooting can occur as well, just in terms of injury. So this definition, so that everybody has a reference, is given by the Department of Criminology at Penn Arts and Science. Okay, so that's where that definition came from. All right. So we talk about these lists that I gave you of mass shootings that just occurred just over this weekend, and it's across the county. I sat here and looked for a second to try to figure out if there was some commonality in these places, if they were, common in region or whatever. And just by looking, so there may be some data and things that bring some commonalities out that I did not have the time to go through. But in general, we see this happening in the north, in the south, and Midwestern areas. So it's not an issue that's in any way localized. It's not a their issue down there or what they do up there. This is something that's been happening, is happening across the nation. I would say as well that ABC News has said, or I'm sorry, this was actually CNN. CNN has stated that in 2022, it is June of 2022, we are 6 months into 2022, there has been 246 mass shootings. And that they reported that from the Gun Violence Archives. So again, 246 mass shootings where there were more than four people who found themselves a victim of gun violence. 246 mass shootings. So again, I think that prompts us to really say that there's an issue. It's something that really needs to be done. So, I just kind of wanted to survey the reactions across the country in these last coming days to, understand what's happening. As we speak, there are debates in Congress, that have proposals, on the floor for gun reform. These proposals, at this point, according to a report in rollcall.com, are pretty much focused on raising the age to purchase certain firearms or to begin to back red flag laws for emergency gun seizure, and so that's in the case that someone is deemed unfit or maybe making threats that government officials, police authorities are able to confiscate and legally seize guns for people and restrict their access for at least a certain time. but of course, the debate really goes back and forth between whether there is the ability or the need to restrict access to guns, or whether or not this is a mental health issue.
These days, it seems like everybody's talking, but no one is actually listening to the things they're saying. Critical thinking isn't dead, but it's definitely low on oxygen. Join me, Kira Davis, on Just Listen to Yourself every week as we reason through issues big and small, critique our own ideas, and learn to draw our talking points all the way out to their logical conclusions. Subscribe to Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis, an FCB Radio podcast, on Apple, on Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And it tends to be on both sides of party, a partisan situation where Democrats tend to be looking at the issue of restricting legislation and restrictive legislation, and Republicans would like to talk about mental health issues. So what I'd have to say just in terms of that, and just putting it out there like that, is that, I do personally feel like, and I often just think about this even in other daily incidences of violence and gun violence even in the community that I live in, is that I do feel like having the ability to potentially take someone else's life in any way, but particularly with a gun, does reflect some issue, it says something about what your mental status is. And to be honest, your mental status, even if it is a temporary situation. So we know that in our court environment, we do have pleas and the ability to try to prove incidences of temporary insanity and just general mental instability. So I do believe that. I am a great proponent of any way and for any reason to try to prevent violence and despair, whether and even violence upon oneself. I do feel like in a situation like this, it's easier, for example, someone who has committed suicide or has tried to commit suicide to talk about mental illness. But I do feel like when we try to damage, to cause harm, great harm to someone else, that there is some mental health issue there too. So I do want to say that, as a Black woman, often I would say we get to mental health in situations like this is very difficult to talk about, because Black people in general often are not afforded the excuse of mental illness. So I will say that very clearly. And as far as I know right now, especially with the larger, more publicized events that have happened in the last couple of weeks, that these were not Black men. They were white men. And where we as a community get very frustrated is that mental health becomes an excuse where it's never an excuse for us. And, very often we would like to point out the egregious conditions that we've lived in for centuries at this time, and kind of saying that as a crisis, as a general condition, mental health is a big deal in the Black community. And so I just stand here saying that it's hard to stomach when someone on the news says, well, do we know if this person has mental health issues? Because we're not afforded the same when there is some tragedy that is happened, even if it's not mass violence. And there is statistics to say that from a mass shooting standpoint, Black people, Black men are not likely to be the perpetrators. So it's frustrating when we can't sit back and say that our brothers, sisters, whatever, are in a situation because we had cried out for so many times and so many years to try to get help. And this was the result because help was not afforded to us. Even though often that is the truth as well. So the point is, however, from a general stance in a human situation, mental health is an issue. It is an issue when we see a violent individual. It is an issue when someone does not have empathy enough, does not have even care of self enough to stop themselves from horrific tragedies like this, that cannot say that there's awful consequences. And awful consequences in a very real sense in terms of, consequences for themselves in terms of potential jail time, consequences for themselves in terms of their own personal demise, consequences of thinking about what the people around them feel, their parents. These are things that their parents, grandparents, caretakers, etc., their friends and what their opinions. These are things that people in a relatively sane, and I do say relative because let's be real, we're all dealing with some type of mental illness. But those of us in some relatively sane frame of mind have these checks that say, I'm not going to go that far. Whether it's a retaliatory situation, whether it's a sense of depression and despair, these checks keep us from going to a place where we are inflicting especially bodily harm. So when it goes past that moment where those checks are no longer there, that care for just human life is no longer there, then something is not functioning right, in my opinion. In your mind. And it can be for various different reasons, poverty, environment, whatever those situations may be that have added up and brought you to this place. It could be a chemical imbalance. It could probably be another number of things. Again, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. So, I don't have a list of all of those reasons, but something has to be happening. Something has to be happening mentally. And let's be real too, as a person of faith, something has to be happening in your spirit and in your heart. So that's one thing I want to address, that I do believe, I do support more mental health resources, more mental health resources in our communities across the board, from our states to our local municipalities. The fact of the matter is that people that would never even go to this, the fact of the matter is there is just a struggle. There is a struggle to get mental health resources for anyone who chooses and feels the need to have them, as part of our overall well-being and as part of our healthcare system. People sometimes in distress and despair have to wait for months. And let's put a finger in that too, right? Wait for months just to get assistance. I've experienced situations where people that I know have had to, for example, probably needed some therapy, probably needed some strategies, But the best thing that they could be given in a moment is medication. And again, I'm not against medication either. And with that, however, though, what I've always been told, and I have had the advantage of being getting to a place of therapy in some place when I have felt that I've needed it, where I've been informed by doctors that medication is only an assistance, but the real meat of your work is with a therapist and being able to work some of the things out that are internal. So the fact that those things are not, we don't have, and again, here we go, it's the Ashley and Dookie show. Okay, sorry about that. So the fact that we cannot have access to those things is very problematic, again, in a number of different reasons. And it is a relevant conversation that we need to have in our conversation about gun legislation. All right. Now, I probably spent too long on that, but let's moving on, however. We then have the other side of the coin. And let's be real. I often think that policy often falls in this equation where there's not necessarily just one person or one side that is right. There is some middle grounds and or there is a both and situation. So from the standpoint of many Democrats, we have some recommendations for at least what's kind of been identified as about four categories of laws. It is to raise the age to be able to purchase guns, and specifically assault weapons, and that's from 18 to 21. So, excuse me, the national age is currently right now 18, and so we would be raising that to that age to 21. The second is to just outright ban assault rifles and high-capacity magazines, which has been done before. At this point, there is a lot of data that says banning assault weapons did bring down the incidence of mass shootings and death in the country. So it was something that worked. However, because of this Republican thought process of or continued push as Second Amendment infringement, this assault weapons ban was able to expire. So it's no longer effective. The third is safe storage laws. And the fourth is red flag laws. And again, as I stated earlier, red flag laws are the ability for government officials to restrict the access of a person who otherwise would have legally been able to get firearms based upon some concern of community, family members, etc., that they may be in a situation where they could potentially harm themselves or harm others. And so then therefore, for some length of time, police agencies can come and confiscate weapons from that person because of their potential danger. So with that, in addition to mental health legislation, and again, let's be real, mental health legislation is going to touch so much many other areas instead of just simply gun laws, gun reform. But I personally look at these four categories and kind of say, well, what's the issue really, right? And these are pretty easy things that we can do, that there is data out there that backs the ability for these things to happen. So first of all, first thing that I see is safe storage laws and having some restrictions on the way how we have to store our weapons. So clearly, just even by what it says, this is not a restriction on guns. It's not telling you what guns you can own. It's not telling you how many you can own. It is saying that there is just a proper way to be able to store your guns so that someone who you don't want to have access, whether it's the ability to be stolen, whether it's your children, whomever, that should not have access to your own personal private firearm cannot easily get to it, okay? And this is just, I think, some comprehensive, pretty common sense, and basically common sense thing that any gun owner should do. So, according to the Alliance for Gun Responsibility, it says that reasonable efforts can take many forms, like gun safes, trigger locks, or storing ammunition separately from firearms. 27 states and Washington, D.C. have enacted these access prevention or storage laws to help keep children from accessing firearms. There is what's called the Initiative 1693, which Washington voters approved in 2018, which includes a dangerous access prevention provision, which incentivizes safe storage by creating criminal liability, depending on the severity of the incident. If a child or other prohibited person accesses an insecurely stored firearm and uses it to hurt themselves or someone else, it also encourages gun owners to report the theft of their firearms within 5 days of knowing a gun was taken. Additionally, cities like Seattle and Edmonds have enacted their own safe storage laws. So this is Seattle, Washington, we're talking about. So, you know, this is really geared towards unintentional shootings. Again, in some situations where mass shootings have occurred by people who would not be able to get guns, or in places that may have a waiting period or something to that nature, they don't have any other alternatives because your firearms are stored safely. And then, of course, we definitely want to prevent our children from accessing them. And I will tell you that it's pretty easy. Just a quick anecdotal story from my own personal life. And that is, when I was young, I was visiting my great uncle who lived in a rural area in southern Ohio. And it was and is very common for people to own firearms. We were visiting, of course, my mother and my uncle were entertaining each other, talking. And as a child, like many of us children do, we got up and found a way to entertain ourselves. So we were playing and he had a piano and like a living room area. He has a living room area and a separate kind of TV area, I guess. So my mother and he were in the TV area towards the back of the house. My brother and I ended up in the living room area playing around, sliding down steps, like doing just whatever it is. And then at the bottom of the steps at one point, my brother and I really both noticed a gun. My great uncle did have children, particularly one child my age, pretty close to my age and grandchildren, things like that. So what our first instinct was this was a toy gun. And never at this point, there was no guns in my house. So never at this point did we really actually see a gun. And my brother picked it up and said, "Look, Ashley," and pointed it at me. Just so happened at some point in time, and of course my memory is a little, like all of our childhood memories, a little foggy, but at some point in time, this was just kind of at the moment where my great uncle and my mother came into the room and quickly grabbed the gun out of my brother's hands and said, you know, basically let us know it wasn't a toy gun. We realized it was a real gun. So I can't tell you what my brother felt at that time, but of course that was extremely scary. And we had no idea, none whatsoever. So if we had continued to play with that, the grace of God happened that my parents, the adults in the home, came and saw what was happening. But also, you know, my brother, if I recall, didn't necessarily pull the trigger, but there may have been a safety on it or something like that that stopped him from doing it. But regardless, the fact of the matter is, to me, it was an accident waiting to happen. And by this particular, my uncle being an older person who was living by himself, and even though I said he had children, his children was not in his home. So it wasn't necessarily a regular occurrence that there was young kids in his home. So he probably hadn't thought about it or really, you know, anything. And this was somewhere that was like close to his front door. So probably there for protection and easy access for him. But it could have been something very tragic for us. So, again, just that anecdote to know how quickly, particularly children can get into a situation. But anyway, you know, when there are other bad actors, we know from statistics and the way that criminals and people who are looking to do harm work is that they look for the path of least resistance. So we put alarms on our houses. We had security footage and video now, you know, all of those things, because what we know and acknowledge is it doesn't completely stop crime from happening. But people at minimum think twice about who they are going to victimize if they see that you have it set up, a secure locks and so forth and so on your home versus the next house whose door is wide open. So the fact of the matter is, that's just something that just seems like, boom, real easy. How much conversation do we really have to have about it? Raising the age from 18 to 21. Additionally, I don't see how controversial that could be. We restrict drinking across the country until 21. We have now restricted cigarette smoke across the country from 18 to 21. These are all public health issues. These are all things that have statistics and information behind it to say that they are damaging to the overall health of our community and our society. They also come with security labels, not security labels, but the Surgeon General restrictions and caution signs. I mean, we have cautions and directions on the drugs that we are given, even our Tylenol and et cetera, and even have some standards in terms of how those are administered. You know, in our schools, our children cannot go and just take a Tylenol when they feel like it. even if they are known to have an occurrence of headaches often or some type of pain. If that is necessary for their health and for their comfort and treatment, so forth and so on, there is an adult that has to administer them. So the fact of the matter is that we have age restrictions on quite a few things. We have age restrictions on when we can drive, and how we can drive. Here in the state of Ohio, if it's not across the country, I'm pretty sure it's not across the country, but we are able to drive at 16. I think that's the standard age. But what the state of Ohio has also done was limited the number of people that can be in the car with you until you're the age of 18, because of the incidence of accidents and distracted driving of teenagers. So teenagers can now only drive with one additional passenger in their car. Again, just as a source of employment. For example, we have our Uber and Lyfts and taxis and so forth and so on. We have restrictions to when they can actually start being able to be employed in those matters. And that's over 25. So many restrictions based upon age, based upon safety. You can't work at a bar until you're at least 18, and you cannot serve alcohol until you're 21. So to look at this situation and say, we cannot do that, or it becomes problematic. There's no way to write this legislation to be able to give access to, for example, our military, our boys and girls who go into the military. It's just absolutely ridiculous. That just flat out shows just to me, resistance for no reason. To me, to say that I'm just not willing to do my due diligence in my job to craft legislation that also acknowledges maybe the few exceptions that they are. And again, in this day and age, there's no real reason why, I don't know any reason why an 18-year-old needs to go buy a gun. So that is something that the two that I do see is very, very easy to put together. Now, the ban on assault weapons, I think it's similar in my mind to being 18 and 21. So again, in this situation, this is just pretty much, again, banning high capacity weapons that are meant to kill quickly a number of different people, or quote unquote, for those of us who give the excuse of being hunters and so forth, they are there to a number of different things or animals quickly. The truth of the matter is I don't think that people use these mass high capacity magazines necessarily in hunting, from what I've seen, and I do have a limited view, is that these are also just, these are guns that I think that people use because they are, they have a bang to them, because they do have a deadly capacity. So they are, thrilling in some ways, in the same sense as a, to me, as a roller coaster would be thrilling. But again, they're not necessary. They're not necessary in the sense that when we need, if we our basic fundamental Second Amendment right, what is used for the ability to protect ourselves, to protect our property, even with the potentiality of having to form some militia to protect our rights, this is just something to me that just don't have to, we don't need to have access to in the general public. And again, we also had a time period in our own history, that has proven that this does lower the incidences of death. It gives more, there gives more time to react in a situation where someone does enter into a room with the intention to cause harm. They don't have the ability to do as much damage and in a very short period of time. So those are the things. I will tell you that I'm not against red flag laws, but this is where the rubber hits the road in terms of me being a little bit concerned. All of these, I have some concern about how these laws would be used equitably. So a red flag law, again, not saying I'm against it, but I just like to hear more about how we really implement these laws and make sure that they're not used against Black and brown people in an unjust way. And I do feel like this one here for me, when I hear it at minimum, that's the first thing that I think about. The fact of the matter is, too, is I do believe from a Black perspective, when we do hear about restrictive gun laws, that Black folks who are against restrictive gun laws tend to be against them because they feel like it is going to be an immediate attack on them and not on this large national issue of mass shootings, which again is not necessarily reflective of who we are, the conditions we have, and some of the problems we have. So it would be used more in a blanket way to target individuals in the Black and brown community instead of really focusing on prevention of mass shootings and prevention of harm in any way. So with red flag laws, I do see that as a potentiality. I will say that in this moment, I just pray, and I'm hoping, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that some of our wonderful folks that focus, elected officials that do have an eye for social justice, have some of that in their purview to try to address when they are talking about red flag laws. However, I just think from a general perspective as well, we just have to spell out for ourselves how these things are used and what's the process. What are the time periods in which someone might be restricted from having access to guns? And then how do they get it back? So in that sense, I am acknowledging the rights as a Second Amendment right to have guns. And I will say in general, when we're talking about gun legislation, period, is sometime I really have a struggle where there's a you strike a balance in terms of constitutionality, in terms of citizenship and rights to citizens, and when, and especially for how long those rights can be taken away. So that is also, to be very honest and very frank, when we have just a general discussion with the ability to own legislation, when we have ex-offenders, own legislation, goodness gracious, what am I saying? When we have the ability to own guns, when we are talking about ex-offenders. So, you know, first of all, we know that we have issues with the criminal justice system, and most folks, a good amount of folks oftentimes, are not treated fairly, are not sentenced appropriately, and some of the things that they're often charged with are completely irrelevant to what may have happened. And there is a huge burden on them even after they have finished their punishment. And that's even for their incarceration time and probation time. So once all of that has fulfilled, years after, for a lifetime after, they are still dealing with the consequences of it. And one of those consequences often is the ability to carry firearms. I do question that. That to me is a place and a point where they, where we are often taking the ability for these people to regain and be restored to our society and to be citizens. I'm not gonna go down that rabbit hole right now. That's a time for another conversation, but it is, this red flag law kind of goes into that a little bit, in the sense of, you know, what are the true parameters of that? I have I'm sure I have a sneaky suspicion that in a red flag law, if it becomes a national policy, those details will come down to individual states to flesh out the details of what their red flag laws may look like. And then again, I would say for all of these, we have to make sure that Black and brown people are not over-policed and over-restricted, where the white community finds loopholes, as they often do in many other situations. So the point, though, however, is I believe the answers are here. And they're all of them. And even if we have to like make a Gantt chart or some scheduling calendar or something to that manner and decide which we're going to tackle first, and then continue to look forward to additional recommendations or additional policy matters that address some of these other things, then we should. Mental health in itself is a bipartisan issue, and it can cover many, many different ills that we are facing today. And especially in the light of these mass shootings, which again, from a mental health perspective, will have affected all of us. It is a traumatic situation that we all endure as we hear about it, but definitely the resources need to be available to those who are directly affected. We also have to face with the mental health conditions of what we've have gone through as a nation and as individual neighborhoods through the pandemic and individual groups through the pandemic. And then there was still stuff that was happening, legacies of trauma that really needs to be dealt with. And we need to find the resources. So that's just however we do it, If we do this under gun law legislation and provide additional resources to our community for mental health, great. If we do that under some other social service or aid program, great. But it needs to be done. And these others that directly, recommendations from the Democratic Party that directly do put some restrictions. One thing that wasn't mentioned here is waiting periods. Let me not use the word restriction. Put some guidelines to gun ownership. It matters. These guidelines affect the ability for people to do harm in a mass situation or even in an individual situation. We didn't talk about waiting periods, but I think there was a point somewhere that somebody made that if there are 24-hour waiting periods on women when they are choosing abortion, there should definitely be 24-hour waiting periods on guns. The purpose of 24-hour waiting periods in an abortion situation is to determine if that is what you really want to do. Give you time to reflect. Why wouldn't we have time to reflect on whether or not we want to purchase a gun to harm someone if that is our if that is our intent? And if it's not our intent and we're just making a purchase because we like guns, we're making a purchase because we're planning a hunting trip, then we can do our due diligence just to make sure that other people are safe. It's like showing your ID for alcohol. We used to say you get mad when you're under 21. So I'll tell you the truth. I was one of those sneaky chicks. And so, yeah, I probably have purchased alcohol a time or two before I was 21 years old. And one of the things that was said to me was, don't get mad if they card you, or don't get mad if they ask for ID. Just say you forgot and walk away. Because if you were truly over 21, you wouldn't be mad. So that's the same way that I look at this situation. If you're truly just making some plans, you know, I want to go on a hunting trip. My hunting trip is 2 weeks away. So let me go, you know, start preparing ahead of time so that I can get the things that I want or need. If I just see a gun I like and purchase and I'm a gun collector, nobody said I can't have the gun. I just have to wait 24 hours to get it. And that should be okay, especially when you have no ill intent, especially when you have nothing wrong in your background, you know? So that is what I will leave us with today. I think the answer, these are the calls. I think the answers are in a lot of this. And there may be even more that today we weren't able to touch on. One of the things I'm really interested in kind of studying a lot more is just what the international laws are about gun safety. Yes, the immediate difference is that our Constitution and our foundation has a clause and addresses the ability to bear arms. I know. But I will say, as it has been said before, to me, when the founders wrote that document, they knew that it was imperfect. And there are provisions made to be able to work with and to change those things based on what our society sees fit. Our democracy was formed to grow. And growth shouldn't stop until death. So as long as we believe that our democracy is not dead, we should continue to learn, to be open, and make the changes necessary for a better society. So again, you guys, this is Ashley, and I'm glad you hung in there with me. If, again, you have anything to say to me, any comments, you disagree, you agree, you want to add stuff, again, any future show possibilities, call 216-302-4139 or email views216fcb@gmail.com. I am sending you this with so much love today, so many prayers. We didn't get to address that, but thoughts and prayers are also relevant. Again, I'm a woman of faith, and so I'm always going to pray and pray for you. Thank you guys, and have a great day. Great couple weeks till we're back. Love you.
The FCB Radio Network, first-class broadcasting worldwide.